Today's case is about a crime that happened in the least likely scene of violence, a yoga supply store. In 2011, at a Lululemon store in Washington, United States, a barbaric crime did take place. Two employees were attacked, and just one of them survived to tell their story. But as the days passed, new clues were discovered which revealed that this apparent robbery had turned into a crime of opportunity. It ended up having an almost unbelievable outcome. Lululemon is a Canadian brand that has numerous outlets in the United States, Europe, Asia, and Oceania. Specializing in yoga items, it expanded the business to offer sportswear items. It is considered to be one of the most expensive brands in North America. In one of its stores in Bethesda, Washington, the following mysterious and cruel events took place. On March 12, 2011, a Saturday morning just before 8 a.m., Rachel, the store manager, arrived to start her shift. When she put the key in the glass door, she realized that it was already open. Her first thought was that someone had forgotten to lock up securely the previous night. But when she entered the building, she saw that the lights were on. Rachel soon realized something was very wrong. She noticed several things out of place, items scattered on the floor. It was clear that the store had been robbed. Afraid, she nervously left the store and looked for the phone in her bag to call the police. Next to Lululemon was an Apple store. The iPad 2 was launching that week and a small queue of people had formed eagerly waiting for the store to open. A guy named Ryan noticed Rachel's nervous state and approached her. She explained that she thought the store had been robbed, and he offered to go back into the store with her and see if everything was okay. With each step they took, more things were noticed. The cash registers were open, and all the money was missing. Receipts and clothes were scattered on the floor. It was a huge mess. Rachel was gripped with fear, and she decided to go outside to call the police while Ryan continued to look around. There was a trail of blood on the floor heading towards the back of the store. Upon following the blood into the warehouse, he was confronted with a horrible scene. He found a woman lying face down in a pool of blood. Realizing that this was a crime scene, he turned to leave. But before he reached the door, he heard the sound of someone moaning. It came from the staff bathroom. He approached and found another woman, tied up, with several cuts on her body, her hands and feet tied with a plastic piece called a nylon cable tie. She was having difficulty breathing. Ryan left the store and described to Rachel what he had just found. He asked her to call an ambulance immediately. Help arrived in less than 5 minutes, and the two victims were soon identified. They were Jana Murray and Brittany Norwood, the store employees responsible for closing up the previous night. Jana, 30, had a degree in business administration and a postgraduate degree in communications. She was engaged and had plans to get married the following year, in 2012. Her hobbies were hiking, bungee jumping and practicing yoga. She was also extensively involved in charity work, having spent 2 years in Europe volunteering with various organizations. She had been working at the Lululemon store for 1 year, mainly to cover her school expenses. The other employee, Brittany, was 28 years old and also an honor student on a full scholarship studying at a Washington university. In addition to shining in her studies, Brittany was an incredible athlete. She was a Washington female soccer all-star. All-star means you play for the state, usually under a scholarship, and participate in countrywide tournaments as a representative of your state. Brittany's trainers described her as a person who was always happy and motivated. She dreamt of opening her own gym. Brittany had worked at Lululemon for 6 months. When help arrived, Jana was pronounced dead at the scene, and Brittany was taken to the emergency room. The police also thought that the women had been sexually assaulted because they were both with their wearing in an unusual way. The store was closed to allow the investigation to take place. From here onwards, there are three things that happen simultaneously. A forensic examination of the store, an examination of Jaina's body carried out by the coroner, and Brittany's care at the hospital. During the forensic analysis of the site, the police verified that the store did not have any internal security cameras. Cash had been stolen from the registers and safes. They found several tools scattered about, including tools from a toolbox from the store itself. There were footprints of two people. One wore small sneakers, and the other wore large ones. The footprints of the large sneakers were from a sneaker that was left in the store. The brands were identified easily. This was an important clue because it appeared that the attackers had fled, leaving their sneakers behind. The coroner's examination confirmed that Jaina did not have suffer sexual abuse, but her body had exactly 331 wounds. Her injuries included bruises, cuts, and punctures. They were caused by maintenance tools, including a screwdriver, wrench, hammer, and a box cutter. Despite this, the cause of death was given as asphyxiation. On her admission to hospital, Brittany was taken to the emergency room where she was checked by a medical emergency team. Her clothes were collected as evidence. She had cuts on her face, chest, legs, hands, and on the top of her forehead, a wound as if something heavy had been thrown at her. As soon as she recovered, she told the police about what had happened.
Explain to you guys how it, that night played out.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to him sexually assaulting me and zip tying me, they made me move her car.
Okay.
I know where her car is. And they seemed to know where it was, where she was parked.
Okay.
They asked, they said, where are her keys? I have no idea. I don't, one of them punched me in my head and made me look through her coat and her bag for them. When I finally found them, they said, if I was to pass to anyone and open my mouth, I can consider myself dead. And that one of them would be watching the entire time. And I honestly don't remember the exact lot, but they said to, like, I don't know, like, cross, it's almost like on the other side of Wisconsin or something.
Okay.
From that street. I remember seeing a cop and I was just too scared to even flag him down, do anything.
Was that like when you left the store or when you were parked?
When I left the store.
So when you first left the store, okay.
And he was driving past in his car?
I think so.
Okay.
She also explained why Jaina's blood was found in her, as she had been taken to the bathroom and so wasn't that close to her.
And how did you fall onto Jaina? I mean, were you on your hands and your knees, or straight down, face down?
On my knees.
Okay. Were you straddling her, or were you actually physically, like, pancaked on top of her, or what?
They pushed me on her. And you touched her head.
You touched her head? With what?
Hands that slid to the ground.
Okay, so your hands got in the blood on either side of her?
Yes.
Okay. I know it's hard.
And blood all over.
Yeah, blood all over you. And then what? And what, did he say anything to you when he pushed you down?
It's my fault.
Okay.
Hey. Você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, Venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca. Porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.
Brittany had a mark on her forehead, probably the result of a blow made by the heavy object that she herself identified. She had several cuts on her body, including her chest, stomach, arms and legs, but she had no marks on her back, and she had no stab wounds. The police officers there were already wondering how one victim could have been brutally murdered, while the other was just cut and tied up. Something was strange about the scenario. That same day, she underwent a forensic examination, and no signs of sexual abuse were found. It was noticed that she had a cut on her hand, parallel to her thumb. This was consistent with a self-inflicted injury that happens when a person tries to use a knife against someone, but lets the knife slip through their own hand. The angle of her other wounds suggested they were self-inflicted. In total, only 25 wounds were found on her body. No puncture wounds. And when I say only 25, I'm comparing it to the number of wounds on Jaina's body, more than 300. On Monday the 14th, having been discharged from the hospital, the police contacted Brittany and asked to talk to her again. Now that she had recovered a little, they wanted to speak to her to see if they could gather more information that could help them solve the case. Brittany gave the same story, but this time she remembered a few more things. She said the men had worn gloves, were of medium to high height and appeared to be very young, about 20 years old. She added that one of the men cursed at her a lot, saying really vulgar things. When questioned, Rachel, the store manager, said that Jaina and Brittany had covered the second shift. Jaina was responsible for closing the register and closing the store. She said that at around 10 p.m, Jaina texted her to say that she had already closed the store and asked if by any chance Brittany had bought a pair of leggings from her earlier. Rachel replied no, that she didn't remember the employee making any purchases. Jaina said that when they were checking each other's bags, a common security procedure, she saw a pair of leggings in Brittany's bag with the tag still on them. When she asked to see the receipt, Brittany said that she had lost it, but that she'd purchased them when Rachel was manning the register, so there was nothing to worry about. But Rachel confirmed that Brittany had not made the purchase. With each new piece of information, the police suspected that something was very wrong with the surviving victim. One of the investigators spoke to several employees of the adjacent Apple store. The Apple store manager, Ricardo Rios, told them something shocking. He said he had heard noises coming from the other side of the store, like heavy things being thrown and broken. They approached the wall and could hear some screams. It sounded like two women fighting. One of the voices was screaming hysterically. He couldn't really understand it, and the other voice even screamed, "Help me, God, please help me." The Apple employees did not call the police, as they said they didn't want to get involved, and because that seemed to be just two women making drama. The detective also sought out the watchman, who had been on duty that night, and who was supposed to take care of that 15 store block. According to him, he didn't hear anything, because on the night of the crime, he had his headphones as he was listening to music on his iPod. In other words, three people that night could have saved Jaina, and none of them chose to do the right thing. The watchman, who had failed in his duties, was sent away, and the Apple employees probably still feel guilty to this day. Their testimony was still used as evidence because they insisted that they had only heard female voices. With regard to the sneakers found at the scene, the manager Rachel confirmed that they were items for sale in the store. It didn't make any sense that the attackers would have come in, changed their sneakers, done what they did, then left them in the store and walked away. They also found that the robbers had not brought their own weapons. They only used the tools that were in the store during the attack. Also, Brittany said that she passed out, but at no point in the morning did she wake up. Did she really pass out? The investigators also discovered something else. Jaina's car was parked 2 blocks from the store, and when they opened it, they found several traces of blood. Samples were collected and sent for analysis. When the results came back, it was confirmed that they were from Jaina and Brittany. So, on March 18th, the police called Brittany for one last interrogation before arresting her as the only suspect in the crime.
Brittany, comes a point sometimes when we have to break down and get everything off our chest. You gotta tell us what really happened.
I'm telling you.
Okay, because I know what really happened.
I told you what really happened.
No, what you've done is you've concocted an incredible story that doesn't make any doggone sense.
No.
With the injuries that you have, they're self-inflicted. Yeah, they're self-inflicted. You did this to yourself. It's incredible that you want me or anyone to believe that you're lying like this overnight, haven't moved, okay? That's posed. Nobody in the world is going to believe this story. No one. He doesn't believe it. My boss doesn't believe it. When I tell your brother and your sister, they ain't gonna believe it. And your mother and your father, they're gonna say, bullshit.
Can I go home?
Been a little bit, but how did it start? Come on, let's get this over with. Come on, baby, let's get this over with. Nah.
Minutes later, her brother entered the room and took a different approach to try to understand everything that had happened. The two remained in the room alone.
Listen, I don't know if I can let you go. Tell me right now. Did you do it?
Chris, hey, I just want to go for
it. I'm not going to let you go. But you need to tell me. I know how to talk to this guy. Because if you did, we have to get you a lawyer to defend you. And it's going to be a media storm. You need to tell me right now. You did.
I just want to talk about it here.
Brittany was arrested on murder charges. The trial hearings began that same year. Through testimony and evidence, the prosecution put together the following version of events to explain the order of all the facts. The store's management had noticed that merchandise was disappearing and that this only happened on the days that Brittany worked. The management had already caught her once, and according to the store's rules, Brittany had received a written warning. She knew that if she repeated the infraction, her employment would be terminated. On the night of the 11th, she was caught by Jaina committing another crime. Brittany lied that she had purchased the item from their manager, Rachel, that morning. When they left, Jaina went to her car and exchanged messages with Rachel. As soon as this exchange of messages ended, Brittany called her to say that she had forgotten her wallet inside the store. But apparently, she actually intended to confront Jaina and ask her not to tell the management. It is believed that Jaina may have said that it was too late, as she had already talked about it with Rachel via text message. Then, in a moment of fury, Brittany repeatedly attacked her co-worker for 20 minutes. After the crime, she robbed the store, went out to hide the money somewhere, using the victim's car, parked it in a different location, and returned. She then messed up the whole place to make it look like a robbery. She altered their clothes to make it look like sexual abuse had taken place. She tied her own hands and feet with nylon cable ties, pulling the seals from her ankles with her hands, and those on her hands with her teeth. She lay down, slept, and waited for someone to arrive the next morning. The public defender claimed that while she did commit the crime, it was not premeditated. The two women had argued when they returned to the store, and Brittany had lost all control. But the prosecution was able to prove that at one point, Jane had tried to escape through the back doors, and that Brittany had dragged her back inside. Jane then locked herself in one of the bathrooms, but Brittany broke down the door. In other words, even if there was no premeditation, she had had two chances to stop what she was doing, and she didn't. During the hearings, she took full blame and said she was sorry for what had happened. In January 2012, after a unanimous vote, Brittany was sentenced to life in prison without parole. The judge ended the hearing by saying that he felt satisfied to remove a lying, cold-blooded, malicious, audacious, and diabolical person from society. In 2015, she requested a new trial to reanalyze the entire case. This was denied. A year after the crime, Lululemon was renovated. They decided to make a memorial for Jaina and placed it in front of the store where the window was. At the top of the glass, they installed a stained glass window with the word love in honor of her. In 2017, the Lululemon store changed its address. They stayed in the same block. They went from number 4,856 to 4,838. When they changed, they said that this stained glass window wouldn't fit in the new store, so they gave the piece to her brother. Jaina Murray, unfortunately, lost her life in an unbelievable way while performing the duties of her job.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.